Support for the California Report comes from the California Healthcare Foundation, rating hospitals, doctors, and long-term care. Smarter choices start at calqualitycare.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.
This is the California Report. I'm Scott Schaefer. With the holidays upon us, a slightly different take on stories of the season, including a Hanukkah celebration behind bars.
There's a lot of friction in prison. There's a lot of bias in prison. And this is one way of asserting my personal identity.
Also, how couples with different religions negotiate the holiday season and celebrating a Christmas tradition while separated by the border fence between Mexico and California.
Today we stand here, not being able to touch each other, not being able to pass food across the border. Despite that division, you know, folks continue to come here and celebrate this very beautiful moment for us, which is Christmas.
Plus, a star Nutcracker ballerina remembers her childhood in Cuba. It's the California Report. We're in the final frenetic days of this holiday season, shopping, eating, attending office parties, and for some, hiding from the craziness of it all. And so today on the California Report, we bring you stories of the season, stories of faith, celebration, and finding the deeper meaning of these holidays. And we begin with a story of Hanukkah, the Jewish Festival of Lights. Tuesday was the first night of Hanukkah. To mark the occasion, about 20 men filed into a chapel to worship in English and Hebrew. The men are gathered in a spare room with beige cinder block walls, well-worn linoleum floors, and harsh fluorescent lights. Most are wearing yarmulkes. The only woman in the room leads them in prayer.
Can I have a volunteer to read the source the rabbis taught?
The rabbis taught the laws of Hanukkah require one light for a person in a household. Those who want to be more careful may use one light for each member of the household.
The men are mostly dressed in blue pants or jeans and blue tops. They sit on metal folding chairs. This is Hanukkah at San Quentin Prison. Carol Hyman is the Jewish chaplain here.
I'm going to light the candle, and then we're going to sing Ma'ot Zur.
Rock of ages, let our song praise thy saving power.
Happy Hanukkah, Chag Sameach!
The ceremony ends with the chaplain fist-bumping each of the men and wishing them happy Hanukkah. Then it's time for the inmates to return to their cells. As we sit in our office, just off the chapel, I asked Hyman how many Jewish inmates there are at San Quentin.
It's as complicated as if you went to Israel and asked who is a Jew. You really need to ask what you mean and answer what you mean by who is a Jew.
Like so many things in Judaism, the answer is open to interpretation. She says there are 80 to 90 men who attend her classes and services. Some were raised Jewish, others came to the faith later in life, often while in prison. Hyman says, however they came to Judaism, most are looking for answers.
In terms of the big questions of life, you know, which are, is there a God? If there is a God, what does that God want me to do? How should I live? Why am I here? How can I change? Those kinds of things.
Hyman has been the Jewish chaplain here for 10 years. Her spiritual work in prisons began 14 years ago after a long career in the wine industry. Most of the inmates at today's Hanukkah service are serving life sentences, many for first or second degree murder. Hyman says she decided early on she would read the court transcripts on these men, but only after she got to know them.
I can read something on paper and be utterly appalled and shocked by it. But when the person is in front of me, that's not how I'm relating to them. That's not who I see them as. Thank God.
Inmate Raymond Aldrich had a Jewish mother, but he was not raised with any religion. In 1977, Aldrich was convicted of 8 armed robberies and a murder. He rediscovered his Jewish roots in prison. His mother told him it would help center him. He says she was right.
I'm grateful to be at an institution that has a Jewish chaplain. Most don't. Before I came here, that wasn't available to us. So I'm grateful for this community here.
Aldrich tells me that to him, Hanukkah is a story about fighting to have your own faith. and to practice your own beliefs.
There's a lot of friction in prison. There's a lot of bias in prison. And this is one way of asserting my personal identity.
To be sure, the Jewish community at San Quentin is diverse. Many are African American, including Ahmed Pali. 32 years ago, he killed his wife after an argument in San Diego. He's been in prison ever since. Although Pali is Muslim, he prays with the Jewish congregation here.
It's an emotional connection being with people who love and worship God. And it's made me a better person.
Among the men Hyman ministers to, about 35 are on death row. Hyman meets with them one-on-one.
There's no question. They've all done extremely upsetting things. But that doesn't, it isn't true that the men on the row were some kind of monsters. It's just not true.
That, of course, is the opinion of a chaplain. The guards and others who deal with these men would not be as charitable toward them as Hyman is.
I'm not naive. I've met them. I've spent hours and hours with them. I've read their files. I know what they've done.
She says, in fact, most of these men are not that different from her. But after a decade at San Quentin, Carol Hyman seems a bit worn out.
These men are in exile, being separated from community, from friends, from family. There's a tremendous amount of pain here, and that takes a toll. It takes a toll.
This will be Hyman's last Hanukkah at San Quentin. At age 67, she's hanging up her prayer shawl at the end of this month. A prison rabbi from Stockton is set to take her place in January. To see a video of the Hanukkah service at San Quentin, check out our website, californiareport.org. Relationships are all about compromise, right? So what do interfaith couples do during the holidays? Jews light Hanukkah candles. Christians put up Christmas trees. But when couples each want to celebrate their own faith's traditions, it can get a little complicated. KCRW's Avishai Artsy knows that firsthand and brings us this story.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny nose.
That's my girlfriend's niece, Marissa, who's 8. Thanksgiving weekend, we all piled into a pickup truck and headed to the Costco in Vallejo to buy a Christmas tree, my first time ever.
All right, you have a good night.
I can't wait to decorate it. Yes, I got a new tree.
My girlfriend Amanda and I live together, and things are getting serious and we're talking about having kids. She was raised as a secular Christian, and she wants us to get our own Christmas tree. I'm Jewish, and even though I'm not religious, having a tree in my home feels weird to me, like a repudiation of my upbringing. I've always had a soft spot in my heart for Christmas. Santa, ugly reindeer sweaters, candy canes, all of it. I like Hanukkah, too. The candles, potato pancakes, dreidels. But how can I have a little dreidel even stand up to perhaps the greatest Christmas song of all? Seriously, this song came out right after my bar mitzvah, and I could not get enough. As we drove from our home in LA to the Bay Area to celebrate Thanksgiving, I switched on my recorder so Amanda and I could talk this all out.
My mom is, like, really into Christmas tree ornaments, and
Amanda's thinking about converting to Judaism. We take this class at a synagogue every Sunday called Judaism by Choice. In class, we were told that it's just not okay for a Jewish family to have a Christmas tree in their home. But Amanda's really attached to the ornaments that she'll inherit someday.
I don't know. I'm just, like, sad. You know, there are ones that are, like, real special to me that I really like. You know? I don't know. I feel so stupid, like, crying about a Christmas tree. Because, like, really, who gives a shit? You know? I don't believe in Jesus. Like, it's not, you know, there's, like, nothing to do with any religion for me and for my family.
But for me, being Jewish is such a strong part of who I am. I needed more advice.
Most folks in our dominant American Christian culture, this is a big question, and it generates a lot of emotion.
Rabbi Susan Goldberg at Wilshire Boulevard Temple in LA says that for converts to Judaism, this is the hardest time of the year, and giving up the tree is a big part of that.
Even though we have secularized Christmas, the tree does very much represent the Christian holiday of Christmas.
Goldberg tells converts to think about what the tree represents to them and try to find a Jewish equivalent. I ask some of the people in our weekly class how they're handling it. Sarah Reeves is a psychotherapist in Long Beach. She had an artificial Christmas tree, but her Jewish fiancé sees it as a Christian symbol and doesn't want it in their home. She doesn't see it that way.
Because I didn't grow up in an organized religion, it just seemed like American culture.
Reeves still bakes Christmas cookies and hangs stockings with her 7-year-old daughter, Sophia, but she agreed to let the tree go.
I donated the tree to my daughter's school, and then I took all the ornaments, and I had to get creative about how to, I guess, display them in our home. So I ended up stringing them on ribbon.
I'm a little disappointed that we can't have a Hanukkah tree, but I was really looking forward to that.
That's Emily Frederick, a real estate agent in Beverly Hills. She was raised by church-going Baptist parents in Dallas. She's excited about becoming Jewish, but says she'll miss Christmas.
As a child, it was really exciting. I mean, we would get up at 4 a.m. for Santa to come, you know. So that's the only thing that I'm thinking, like, oh, well, what am, you know, how am I going to make it exciting for my children?
We're decorating our tree with ornaments now.
My girlfriend's niece, Marissa, tells me where to put the ornaments on the tree we've just brought home. I am new to this.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Hey, jingle bells.
Watching Marissa's excitement, I get why my girlfriend wants a tree. She was that little girl once, too. I'm having a hard time resisting the pull of Christmas. And yet Hanukkah is a celebration of resisting that pull to assimilate. It commemorates the Maccabees, a Jewish rebel army who fought the Syrian Greeks for religious freedom. But even before that, the Maccabees fought those Jews who wanted to adopt a Greek lifestyle. Here's Rabbi Susan Goldberg again.
Wrestling with these questions is very much the heart of the Hanukkah story. That's why it's wonderful that it happens at this time of year. When it gets to those questions of assimilation and distinctiveness are really useful conversations to have.
My girlfriend Amanda is still deciding whether she wants to convert to Judaism, and I'm still looking for a Christmas tree compromise. Maybe a tree with a Star of David on top? A Christmas cactus? We're still figuring it out. For the California Report, I'm Avishai Artsy.
There's a Mexican Christmas tradition called a posada that usually involves a festive street procession reenacting Mary and Joseph's search for shelter. But the celebration takes on a different form at the southern tip of San Diego County along the U.S.-Mexico border. Under the watchful eye of the U.S. Border Patrol, people on both sides of the reinforced security fence meet to sing carols, share news, and hold tearful reunions. The California Report's L.A. Bureau Chief Stephen Cuevas joined this year's posada.
I join a few dozen people on a chilly Saturday trudging along a muddy horse trail. We head towards the Pacific Ocean, where the immense border wall that snakes across the outskirts of Tijuana disappears into the waves. After about 20 minutes, the sticky mud gives way to wet sand. Bundled in heavy winter coats and hats, the procession marches along the beach for another mile. The border wall gradually comes into view through a veil of sea mist.
For 21 years, San Diegans and Tijuanans have been coming together along this border to celebrate Christmas.
Christian Ramirez is with the American Friends Service Committee, an advocacy group that helps organize the annual Posada Sin Fronteras, or Posada Without Borders. For this event, border agents on the U.S. side allow people to cross into a secured area where they can visit with people on the Tijuana side through postage stamp-sized gaps in the fence.
And today we stand here, not being able to touch each other, not being able to pass food across the border. Despite that division, you know, folks continue to come here and celebrate this very beautiful moment for us, which is Christmas.
No se lo dé más para adelantito a mi hermano si Dios quiere. También a ver qué.
Carlos Aragon Padilla traveled here from South San Francisco to see his sister, nephew, and other relatives. He's not seen them since last visiting Mexico about 10 years ago. They drove for 24 hours from Mazatlan, nearly 1,000 miles, to attend the posada and to see Carlos.
They're my whole life, the loves of my life, my siblings, my nieces and nephews, my sister's grandchildren. They're the ones who push me the most to make it in this country, to really try my best.
Padilla's nephew sings a ballad that expresses a traveler's longing to return and reunite, even in death, with his native land, his Mexico lindo, his beautiful Mexico. There's no cross-border reunion for Yolanda Varona. She's lived in Tijuana since being denied re-entrance to the U.S. 5 years ago after having a tourist visa revoked. She's attending the posada with a group of other women who've all left children or grandchildren behind in the U.S. Varona did get to see her adult son, who's now a U.S. citizen, at a border event here earlier this year.
One of my grandchildren came too, but I didn't like it. The child left traumatized. She thinks I'm in jail. She is too little to understand. She doesn't know I'm deported. I don't want to see her come back here. She just couldn't handle what she saw.
Varona says it was still important for her to attend today's celebration.
This event especially, for me, signifies our desire that they remove this fence to let us return to the U.S. We are asking to be back in our homes.
There's also a few non-Latinos celebrating Posada on the Tijuana side, including a grizzled Irishman with Santa Claus white whiskers.
Patrick Murphy, very Irish. Well, we do Posadas every night. We don't do it as elaborately as today.
That's Father Patrick Murphy. He runs Casa del Migrante, a Roman Catholic aid group in Tijuana that provides shelter and other help to immigrants recently deported from the U.S. He says the theme of the traditional posada, of Mary and Joseph repeatedly being denied and eventually finding shelter, takes on added meaning here.
And so this is symbolically a reminder for us to come together in prayer from both the U.S. and the Mexican side to remind people that there are a lot of people who need posadas. They need shelter as well.
And we commit to welcoming the immigrant as we would want to welcome our Lord Jesus into our home.
There is a political subtext to the border posada, but that's not really what the event is all about, says Christian Ramirez of the American Friends Service Committee.
I think for this little moment today, the great tensions and the many opinions that the immigration debate raises, all of that disappears. And, I can't help but to have my heart warm in what is perhaps one of the coldest places in our country, the U.S.-Mexico border.
As sunset approaches, celebrants brace themselves against the chilly ocean winds. U.S. border agents need to clear the area. People pull themselves from the fence and say goodbye to friends and relatives they may not see again until next Christmas. For the California Report, I'm Stephen Cuevas in San Diego County.
At a time of the year when many churches host special events celebrating Christmas, we take you to one church grateful to be hosting any services at all. Last month, a fire destroyed the sanctuary of Holy Cross, a landmark Roman Catholic church that served working-class immigrants in San Jose for four generations. Rachel Myro reports from KQED's Silicon Valley News Desk.
What do you expect to find at a Sunday Mass just a few weeks after a church burns? This? In the courtyard next to the burned wreckage of the sanctuary, the church ladies of Holy Cross make fresh tortillas to serve with a menudo for parishioners coming out of Mass. The fire left the other buildings on the church property untouched. There are still five Masses every Sunday in English, Spanish, and Italian in Scalabrini Hall. The sound system may not be ideal.
Check, check.
The bells may be pre-recorded, and the bingo game display board makes a funny backdrop to the makeshift altar. But this service is as precious to the congregation as if it were happening in the church itself. Holy Cross is one of a handful of churches in California that still offer masses in Italian. Back when Santa Clara Valley was called the Valley of Heart's Delight, thousands of Italians, especially southern Italians, came here to work the farms, ranches, and wineries. They settled in Northside San Jose. Caterina Marcoccia got married at Holy Cross in 1967. Her grandmother came here.
A lot of memory. My kids, they have First Communion in this church also.
I start to ask what she likes about this church when she bursts into tears.
It's very sad.
Go somewhere else for Mass? Out of the question, for her and many others.
Yeah, I'm very happy to see everybody around to help them out.
These days, there are fewer Italians in the congregation and many more Filipinos and Mexicans. 600 families in all, according to Father Fermo Mondovani. Over the mariachi band that starts to play outside now that the last Mass is over, Father Mondovani explains it's not clear whether the church building is a partial or total loss.
We haven't actually formally started the fundraising because we do not know how the reconstruction is going to be. And also we have the insurance helping us. But the donations and also functions, like you hear now, are already starting. The people are very generous.
Money is coming from outside the congregation, including people who may not attend church regularly now, yet still hold this place close in their hearts. Not far across town, the Quartuccio family sits down at a table laden with baked eggplant, rigatoni with sausage and cheese, and for dessert, guidate, Sicilian fig cookies made special for Christmas.
So does everyone speak Italian?
No.
Or like, you know, a little bit.
Their dad, now passed, painted the mural of Jesus hovering over Jerusalem in the church's cupola. Marianne was 15 or 16 when she watched her father paint the panels in the kitchen. Anthony Quartuccio spent an entire month on the face of Jesus alone.
He was so adamant about making that perfect, and believe it or not, he did. That face of Christ just follows you. And it was devastating to know that that was destroyed.
Marianne, Janet, Joseph, and Anthony Jr. are reflecting on the Little Italy of their childhood, a world long gone even before the fire. Anthony Jr. explains what Holy Cross meant to his parents and grandparents.
When you're an Italian-American immigrant, you come here with nothing, and you're working over there picking prunes all day. The only place you find a little hope and solace for your family and stability is in the church. The prayer services and all the meetings and the pasta feeds and everything else, it was a center, it was an oasis.
That mural is gone forever. What the Quartuccios pray for now is the future of the church, the soul, as they see it, of Northside San Jose. For the California Report, I'm Rachel Miro.
Cuba was in the news this week as President Obama announced he was restoring diplomatic relations after more than 50 years of a lingering Cold War policy. That could be on the mind of a leading ballerina as she performs in the holiday classic Nutcracker Ballet this weekend. For the last 15 years, principal dancer Lorena Fajo has had starring roles as the Snow Queen and Sugar Plum Fairy. Fajo grew up dancing with the National Ballet of Cuba. We caught up with her as she rehearsed with ballet master Christopher Stoll at the San Francisco Ballet Studios.
All of the years that I was trained and raised in Cuba, we didn't have a nutcracker at all. It was non-existent. Then I went to work in Europe first when I left the country, and it was not very popular there either. Then I came to the Joffrey Ballet of Chicago, and it was my first nutcracker, which was kind of rare for a ballerina because most of the ballerinas today, since they're little kids, you get involved into the nutcracker. So for me, it was introduced into my dancing career and my life quite late. It was so exciting being in the Joffrey for the first time with this beautiful production just full of colorful costumes and beautiful crowns with crystals, and almost like living a dream that you had. Holidays in Cuba, the winter holidays, first of all, we are like a summer country, so that's already hard. Like, there is no snow. Christmas takes a different, I think, very different approach, because we are a communist country still. The whole idea of Santa and the fantasy is not very much encouraged.
It's light because it's always a little bit of just me to go there, counter and pique. A little swerve before, like a pencil turn after the pique.
As Nutcracker as a ballet concept grew bigger and bigger in the entire world, I think we have also acquired that. So the last time I was there, I had the chance to sit down and watch a Nutcracker production, and it was very intriguing to me because I was like, what are they going to do? We are not big on this one. We really don't. It's not a tradition for us. And it was beautiful because I think they really fed from all over the world productions. You know, they took a little bit from everything. We celebrate Christmas by doing the Nutcracker. It's tough because you want to be gathering with the people in your country, doing the things that as a little kid were accustomed to you, and you can't. You're here to perform and to entertain other people. In the beginning, it's a little bit of a shock, and as years go by, you adapt and you understand that this is your life and this is where you have chosen to live, and that's how it goes, and there is beauty in it too. There is a great upside to celebrating Christmas somewhere else. Although dancers do this production every year, the kids really make the difference. They really bring the best out of you. When you listen to the music and you're surrounded by them and you see their little faces illuminate because this is like magic to them, all of a sudden you understand that it's worth it. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. 2, 2, 3, 4.
That's principal dancer Lorena Fajo with the San Francisco Ballet. She was interviewed by our intern, Adisa Egan. Check out photos of Fajo in the Nutcracker at our website, californiareport.org. And that's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our director of holiday cheer and cookies is Susie Racho. The technical producer for Santa's Sleigh is Seal Muller. Danny Bringer and Howard Gelman were our engineering elves this week. The online team includes Rabbis David Weir, Adam Grossberg, Lisa Pickoff-White, David Marks, and Don Clyde. Our intern helpers are Adisa Egan and Isaac Silk. The California Report's editorial team of gift wrappers includes Victoria Malione, Kat Snow, and Ingrid Becker. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Support for the California Report comes from Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org. The James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. And the Wesley Foundation, improving the lives of California's children.